Hello, and welcome to the 13th episode of Season 2 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
And we're ready for part 3 of the Deutsche Bank story.
Yeah, and it's one of the pleasures of doing this podcast that we can let people have an in-depth understanding of some of these stories without having to spend hours reading through the papers at them. So this is quite good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. We do the hard work so that you don't have to.
And as I said, we get to have some fun along the way.
Now, you're not suggesting the Deutsche Bank story is full of laughs, are you, Graham?
Well, no, although it does have its amusing moments. I think what I meant by that was that we both actually enjoy doing the research and recording these episodes because it gives us a bit of time to escape from the demands of our everyday lives. And although I tend to edit a lot of this out, we have a bit of banter along the way.
We certainly do. And I think it's very good that you do edit the worst excesses of that out as you go along. So shall I summarise where we've got to so far in the story?
Yes, Ray, please do.
Okay. In part one, we looked in detail at the mirror trades. We looked at what they were, why they were seen as such a significant transgression, given that the underlying activity was legal, and what the regulator had to say about them. In part two, we went on to look at the background to the UK FCA's systematic AML programme, or SAMLP, and how it involves a deep dive into a firm's anti-money laundering policies, procedures, and processes.
Exactly, and it's probably worth pointing out that although these episodes have had, of necessity, a distinct bias towards the UK, because that's where the action happened, the learning is relevant globally, as just pretty much every financial services firm is subject to very similar oversight and regulations.
Very much so, Graham. And there's another strand to this. We spoke in the last episode very briefly about the European Commission's new report on their assessment of recent alleged money laundering cases involving EU credit institutions. And one of the key things that they were keen to take from all of those issues is a requirement for firms that do have an international footprint to have a consolidated global approach to anti-money laundering rather than simply meeting the laws in the individual territories in which they're operating through their branches or subsidiaries.
Exactly. And as we're about to see, the role of the home regulator, especially if it is an EU bank, is critical.
Yes. What was the FCA's starting point in the final notice in relation to the SAMLP?
Well, Ray, let me quote from the introductory paragraph. Quotes, the SAMLP assessment found serious deficiencies in Deutsche Bank's AML control framework and serious CDD, EDD and ongoing monitoring failings as evidence from a review of customer files, including those for the mirror trading customers.
Oh, okay, that's quite some opening paragraph. Just to clarify, CDD is client due diligence. That's the sort of due diligence that you have to do on every client. And EDD is the enhanced due diligence requirements that are in place when you're dealing with particularly high risk clients from money laundering point of view.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that opening paragraph really doesn't leave you in much doubt where the rest of the report's going to go.
Well, no, it doesn't, except the detail that follows is even for a final notice is quite extraordinary.
Well, we'd better get started then. What were the high-level observations?
Number one, the management structure was complex and responsibilities were unclear.
I think they really meant accountabilities, but we'll let that pass.
Yeah, although I fancy we will come back to that. But yes, especially as they refer to controlled functions, which are all about accountabilities. But yes, that's a discussion for later. To be fair, the FCA also point out that DB had themselves recognised this issue in a presentation to an internal KYC steering committee in 2014.
And I suspect that was part of the KYC change programme, which was the reason I came to the bank in the first place.
Well, yes, so it was. So That's one more thing we need to be careful of when we talk about it.
Indeed. But let's carry on. We're still in the public domain at the moment.
We are. So let's carry on with the FCA in the final notice. Go on to highlight the overall lack of AML resourcing, both in London and Moscow. And they specifically call out the effects in the implementation of transaction monitoring systems.
Or indeed the lack of one, as we heard in part one of this story.
Yeah, that was the manual spreadsheet, wasn't it, for the mirror trades?
The very one.
And this also has to be judged against a mandated global reduction in headcount at Deutsche Bank between 2010 and 2012, and also the offshoring of some of the support functions. So this gave rise to a real shortage in compliance staff in both London and Moscow. And even though Deutsche had begun recruiting again in 2013, they just couldn't get enough of the right people quickly enough to make sufficient difference.
I think we need to keep in mind that 2013 was immediately after the whole HSBC story came out, and banks were scrambling to beef up their AML functions, including HSBC. So they were all fighting over a relatively small population of experienced people.
Yeah, happy days. The report goes on to say that the UK AML team consistently highlighted those shortages to senior managers. In one report, they said a number of additional responsibilities had, quotes, presented a significant challenge to the team given the current resource model, end of quote, and that it was, quote, clearly not going to be a sustainable model in the long term.
Not much room for doubt there. And in Moscow?
Same response, Ray. They said that KYC there was, quote, very formalistic with no substance, and that AML was, quote, completely understaffed.
We certainly know from our time there how significantly the headcount grew.
True.
Okay, so that's the high-level issues. Should we go into the detail?
Yes.
Okay, should we start with due diligence?
Yeah, or as the FCA puts it, the inadequate due diligence.
Harsh.
Yes. And alongside that, in the same paragraph, they went on to say that the culture in the markets division failed to instill a sense of responsibility in the London front office for the bank's KYC obligations. The customer risk rating was flawed. The KYC policies and procedures were deficient, and the IT infrastructure was not fit for purpose.
And that's just the first paragraph.
Yep. It went on to say that because of this inadequate CDD, the bank was, quotes, unable to determine who many of its customers were or where their funds came from. As a result, wow, the markets division was unable to assess or manage its level of money laundering risk, end quote.
Yeah. it still shocks me that. And you know what's really striking about that sentence, Graham?
Go on.
There are no mitigants. There are no caveat adjectives. There's no on the whole. There's no largely or in the main. It's really stark and unambiguous language.
It doesn't leave any room for interpretation, does it?
I think that was the point. So shall we dive back into the detail?
Yeah. So the final notice then moves on to roles and responsibilities.
Although, as we've said before, that really should be accountabilities. It's a difference that's often seen, and it's an important difference.
So I think it is, Ray. Do you just want to spend a minute explaining why that is?
Actually, yes. Let's do that now. The fundamental difference, and why we're so keen on emphasising it, is that a responsibility can be shared, whereas an accountability cannot. If you think about it, parents, by and large, have a shared responsibility for bringing up their children, but individually, they're accountable for their own personal actions.
So, responsibility for a task, say KYC at client onboarding, can be delegated to a separate function, but accountability for the quality and completeness of the KYC will always lie with the accountable person, who would normally be the owner of the client relationship.
Exactly. So, with that in mind, what did the FCA have to say?
It said pretty much the exact opposite of the definition we just gave.
So, that although the front office were, to use the FCA's words, responsible for KYC compliance, they mistakenly believed it was the responsibility of the client onboarding team.
Exactly. The FCA say that they also placed undue reliance on the AML team, who we already know was significantly under-resourced and overstretched, in assuring the quality of the files.
And we also know from the final notice that the team were only able to do quality assurance on 10 files per business line per quarter, which, while we aren't given any context as to what that represents in terms of its ratio to the total number of new clients, looks to be a tiny fraction of the overall new business written.
Yes, and even though the Group Executive Committee, the GEC, had recognised the problem, the FCA note that implementation was hampered by, quote, a lack of engagement from London front office, which I personally read as code for we're not doing it.
It's lovely language, though, isn't it? I suspect that someone at the FCA who writes these notices has a very dry sense of humour. The next line says, quote, several managers in London front office were so removed from the onboarding process that they were unaware of serious KYC issues until after Deutsche Bank commenced its internal investigation into the mirror trades. You know, which I read as some senior people in the front office had never even seen a KYC file before.
I think you're right, which is underlined by the fact that the FCA state that all of the low and medium risk files reviewed during the SAMLP contained inadequate CDD.
I had to read that line twice. These were the low and medium risk files, ostensibly the easy ones.
Yeah, and the deficiencies were widespread, covering identification and verification, covering ultimate beneficial owners, corporate structures, documentation, and failing to identify PEPs.
And PEPs would have made them high risk instead.
I'm sure that's a coincidence, Ray.
And the high risk files didn't fare any better, also being savaged by the FCA. And of course, these failings carried over to the mirror trading companies, which then compounds the error, as there has clearly been inappropriate activity taking place as well.
Yes. And then we come to the orphan accounts.
Now, that's a lovely expression, but it's a euphemism for client accounts where the front office had been unable or unwilling to obtain the necessary CDD, but had carried on with the relationship anyway.
Yeah, meaning that they were orphaned from the KYC, and it wasn't just one or two, was it?
No, the final notice says that Deutsche Bank identified at least 5,000 such accounts.
Oops.
Well, quite. Shall we move on to the risk rating methodology?
Not with any great hopes of things improving, but yeah, come on, let's have a look at that.
The first paragraph says, in the kind of language we're getting used to, that the risk rating methodologies were inadequate, meaning that less than 5% of the total client population was categorised as high risk.
Yes, and almost the only determinant of the overall risk rating in the absence of any other risk factors was country risk. And at the time of the SAMLP, there were only 33 countries recognised or categorised by Deutsche Bank as high risk, and Russia was not one of them.
No, and following the visit, we know from the report that the number increased by 300% to around 100 countries, and that's quite a substantial difference. It also says that the original country risk rating was developed using an opaque and informal methodology. A clear warning to firms that country risk must be based on clearly stated empirical data that can be formalised and presented in a cogent and meaningful way.
Yeah, it also singles out the lack of entity type risk and delivery channel risk, especially non-face-to-face relationships, which was, after all, the situation with the mirror trading clients.
And a consequence of that was that all the mirror trading clients were considered to be medium or low risk, which meant that they weren't reviewed by the AML team during onboarding, as their remit only extended to high risk clients.
Yeah, which the FCA further underlined by stating that nearly 50% of the low-risk files and 30% of what they refer to as higher-risk files reviewed during the SAMLP were deemed to have had their financial crime risk underestimated.
50% of the low-risk population is a huge amount, Graham.
Ryan is. Imagine how much money, time and effort it saves if a large population of what should be high or higher risk clients are classified much lower.
Yeah, absolutely. And the FCA makes the point that even if they had been appropriately classified, the AML team had nothing like sufficient resources to review them as the policy required.
Okay, well, that's a quick look at the risk rating. The final notice then moves on to the policies and procedures, Ray, something which in our working lives we've been involved with across a pretty large number of banks.
And sadly, once again, they get savaged there as well. Overall, the policies did not provide sufficient guidance on establishing source of wealth or funds, which meant that both files routinely, and specifically in the case of the mirror trading files, those files were almost entirely inadequate in that regard.
Yes, and neither did the policy require the gathering of expected account activity, meaning that Deutsche Bank were unable to monitor whether a customer's behaviour was in line with expectations or not.
Another memorable line, quotes, all of the customer files reviewed by the authority contained negligible information about the purpose and intended nature of the business relationship.
And then there is also specific criticism of the policy in relation to the underlying clients of intermediaries and the placing of reliance on regulated clients who are not in the EEA, which is not permitted by the EU directive.
And also the failure of the policy to address the remote booking model and ensure proper oversight within the jurisdiction the business is being booked in.
You know, it's just occurred to me when we went through, or you went through, that EU paper, how much of it we are now regurgitating in specific examples.
Yep.
And then finally, the final notice explains that the overall IT infrastructure was inadequate and fragmented and maintained customer data on different systems which were not integrated and which could not be reconciled. Much, it says, of the transactional activity was not subject to monitoring at all.
Well, so there we have it. The next section of the final notice contains a summary of everything we've just spoken about, but I don't think we need to labour the point by going through all of that again.
No, but there is an interesting sentence at the end of this section.
Go on.
It says, quotes, for the sake of clarity, any criticisms of a collective term in this notice, brackets, such as, but not limited to, Moscow Front Office, London Front Office, Deutsche Bank AML Team, the Management Board or GEC, close brackets, are not criticisms of all or even necessarily any particular individuals who fitted that description during the relevant period, end of quote.
Which we take to mean that this was a corporate failure and no one person is going to be thrown to the wolves because of it.
No, and I think that's why there were no personal fines or personal sanctions involved in the final notice.
No. And then the final notice goes on to explain the fines and how they're calculated. But within the generally depressing reading that this section constitutes, there is one really important paragraph which firms should read over and over again.
I can't wait to hear this.
Well, I know for a fact you've read it a number of times, Graham. It says, the authority expects regulated firms and individuals to work with the authority in an open and cooperative manner at all times. The authority considers that Deutsche Bank's cooperation was exceptional throughout the authority's investigation by ensuring that senior management was engaged from the outset, conducting extensive and wide-ranging internal investigations and reporting the conclusions of those investigations to the authority in a fully transparent manner.
Now, that doesn't mirror, if you'll excuse the pun, most people's perception of Deutsche Bank and the fine they received.
No, which is why we ought to make a big thing of it, and why other firms should sit up and take notice. Imagine how large the fine would have been if that hadn't been the case.
Double?
Well, at least I think.
So is that it?
No. The next paragraph is worth reading in full as well. And here we go. After its discovery of the mirror trading and associated issues, Deutsche Bank promptly notified the authority and commenced a large-scale remediation program across its business to correct the deficiencies in its AML control framework and customer files. The authority has also had regard to Deutsche Bank entering into an undertaking not to take on new high-risk customers in the UK until it has remediated the deficiencies in its AML controls to the authority's satisfaction.
See, that's good, isn't it? So you should try not to do anything wrong, obviously. But if you do, the best response is to work with the regulator to put it right and mitigate any previously unknown risks while you're doing so.
Exactly. And two things here. Firstly, Deutsche Bank had learned from that earlier Principle 11 fine. And this was exemplary Principle 11 work on this occasion. And secondly, I suspect that without those last two paragraphs, we'd be talking about the £300 or £400 million fine, not the £163 million they actually paid, bad though that was.
A fascinating journey.
It is. Where do we go next, Graham?
Well, I think in our next episode, we should chat about what we think led Deutsche Bank to such a spectacular fall from grace and the ongoing consequences of that fall.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.